2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
The MLB Daily Dispatch brought to you by good folks over at DFSArmy.com. Hey, now is a great time to get signed up with us over here. If you do so, make sure you go to DFSArmy.com. Use the promo code PODCAST. That'll get you all sorts of great savings on the monthly or the yearly packages that we have for you folks. With that, you get access to our Slack chat channel where guys are in there pretty much 24/7. You also get access to the Domination Station, which could do big things for you in NBA, MLB. PGA. I'm doing false advertising there. That's not what it is. But yeah, make sure you come in. We got all sorts of great tools for you guys. Even though we don't have the Domination Station for baseball, we got great tools that you can use to help you make your lineups. Once again, DFSArmy.com. Use that promo code PODCAST. I'm your host, Al Walsh. Twitter is where you can find me, 14a.walsh. Find Keith Hall over there joining me, as always, at Boomer's DFS Daddy. So, nice little weekend of sports there. We kind of wrapped up the first round for most of these NBA playoff series. Had the NFL draft, which I attended on Friday. Always a good time when football and beer are involved. And even a little bit of NHL playoffs I've been watching nowadays. So, some of these, you know, these series that we got going on in the NBA, not exactly the most exciting. So I flipped over to hockey for a little bit. I'm not going to lie. I mean, hell, I played the sport for 20 plus years.
Okay. I literally have no idea what happened this weekend in sports. It started out being a wifey weekend, which, you know, I've got to take time for the wife every once in a while.
Indeed.
You know, she's the one that keeps me happy, and she puts up with my my crazy ass, so I've got to be able to keep her happy. But yesterday was obviously Saturday night into yesterday was obviously an unprecedented, an emergency type situation with little Katie being sick. So, little scary. Didn't know what was going on, and then he kind of took precedence over everything. So I really honestly have no idea what happened this weekend. That's kind of what I'm going to be doing the next couple days, is catching up with the NFL draft and what's happening. I do know what happened as far as the NBA playoffs, and only because I saw the scores. So I know who's playing and what we're getting, but I don't know anything else.
So you obviously missed my appearance on the NFL Network on Friday. So this is pretty funny. So on the way down there, I went with two of my buddies, and we were just talking in the car on the way down, and I said, man, those people that they show on TV, like, they are the worst. Like, you end up picking some guy that you just have no freaking clue about. You're going apeshit in front of the camera. I mean, I kind of knew, but boy, do they really ask you to, like, turn it up a couple notches. The camera guys and the producers there from NFL Network, I asked, you know, if they would, you know, if they could sweeten the deal with maybe, like, two free beers. I wasn't going to go too crazy, but, you know, the one, I wasn't even wearing Bucks gear. Like, I was wearing a button-down shirt, so I kind of just looked like the wandering Joe in the background. But, I ran into two Bucks fans. Like, one guy had free all decked out in, like, the Gasparilla beads and all that, and then the other guy's got a Phantom of the Opera mask on in Bucks color. Like, it was – these guys came very prepared. So, it was cool that, a couple people noticed me on TV. They sent me text messages and whatnot, so – that was cool, but I did exactly what I said. I wasn't, like, you know, not that I said that I wasn't going to do, but it's exactly, like, what I despise. But I'm kind of hoping that not too many more people see that, because, you know, I was a couple in at that point. So basically, what I did was
all
I took,
bets, like, were off.
I took an Instagram video. So basically the whole time I'm like, I'm on my camera watching you on your camera. So I'm sure the NFL Network picked that up, and that could be used as blackmail at some point in my life. So.
If any of our Twitter followers have access to this video, please tweet at me, Boomer's DFS Daddy. I would love to be able to turn this into a gift or a GIF, because it will be something I will be able to use for years to come.
Mm-hmm. It is the internet. It ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So. We do have 11 games on the slate today, so this is going to be a fun little day. It was one of the best things in the world is to sweat baseball while watching a movie with your wife on a date night.
I mean, I could think of a couple better things, but anywho, you know.
No, and I'll say it's the best because you have no idea what's going on. You're more in tune to other things, and you can just come back and see kind of what happened. Mm-hmm. If for all those people that don't believe in BVP, okay, if you're telling me that it is not real, then go look at Trevor Story's 3 home runs and 11 career at-bats versus Zach Greinke and mm-hmm. tell me it's not real. So you do that, and we'll be good. If you can somehow prove that BVP is not real off of that small of a sample size, he double dogs against him in his first career game, and then he hits another one Saturday. If BVP is not real, then I obviously have never played baseball in my entire life. So,
wow, hot take. I was watching a lot of that game on Saturday. You know, Saturday was my recoup day from being in Philadelphia. But I was really in tune to this game. Zach Greinke, not a hard thrower at all.
Not anymore. No. He really isn't. He's more of a location guy. He's actually performed very, very, very well this season so far. Mm-hmm. But I did kind of say it in our Slack channel. We are not afraid of Zach Greinke. Carlos Gonzalez hits a career 384 with, you know, four home runs off of him.
I paid attention to that BVP. A lot of good it did me.
He had a double and two runs scored. Two hits and two runs scored against him. I'm sorry it wasn't, you know, the double dong type of performance, but it's not like he was bad.
I don't know if that was the total. I think it was like six or something like that.
I'm going
to have to go back here and look, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to go back and look. In fact, I'll do that right now for you.
Oh, great. Great radio. Here we go.
No, you can start. First. Well, if my internet would hurry up.
Snap-a-dingless. All right, call it 9.2.
Yeah, he had... Oh, sorry. He had two walks and a run.
Two walks and a run, man. Come on. What game are you watching, Keith? Let's go here.
I didn't watch it. I told you I didn't watch it.
My goodness.
So, some Trevor
Rockies
Story.
Some Rockies fan you are.
I was watching Beauty and the Beast with my wife.
You did say that was something that had to get done for a while. So, I'm glad to see that finally got taken care of.
Yeah. I actually. Sneakily good movie, by the way.
Really? Well, Emma Watson.
Oh yeah. Absolutely, but you know, not just that, but yeah, sneakily good movie. It was, of course, I was raised on, you know, Disney and stuff like that in my household. But besides the fact that my wife still knew the words to every song that was in the original cartoon movie, it was
chicks know Beauty and the Beast. They know.
Oh yeah.
And if they say they don't know, they're lying. They're lying through the damn teeth.
But. You know, it was actually a good movie. It had a lot of action. You know, it was very, very well put together. It was kind of good. So
all right.
For all of you married men out there, if you haven't taken your wives to see it, I strongly recommend doing so, especially if they're Disney chicks, and they grew up that way. Because it'll definitely score you some brownie points, and don't slack on it. You know, pay the extra little bit of money.
Wear the beast mask to the movie theater.
Oh no, that's not what I was gonna say. Pay if you've got a theater that you know you can, you know, you snuggle up and get a little cozy. You know, with some of these higher end theaters now. You know, we've got the Warren Theater here in Broken Arrow, where like it's 21 and over, and it's like 40 seats, I think, total in the theater. And it's a full service. Like, they'll bring you food, drinks, everything.
That's what I'm talking about. That is what I'm talking about.
And, you know, spend the extra money. It was $22 per ticket. Spend the extra money, you know, invest a little bit, and score some brownie points.
Look at this. Not only do you get MLB DFS advice today, folks, you get happy wife, happy life advice. So
yes.
You sure as hell weren't getting that from me.
Yep, so.
All right. Let us dig into this MLB slate today. As Keith said, 11 games on this one, but let us kick it off in we'll go in New York for this one. Toronto Blue Jays at the Yankees. Marco Estrada goes for the Jays. Luis Severino, the righty, going for the Yankees. And, you know, Marco Estrada here, he's been pretty great, or done pretty well of late. 4 quality starts and 5 tries this season. ERA at 2.70, whip at 1.17. Not getting the run support that he deserves, but that's all right. Struggled a bit here against the Yankees. He's that's where he's gotten the run support over his career with the Yankees. So going to be interesting to see what happens tonight. Severino, a guy that I really like this year. He's got 27 strikeouts in 22 innings. I mean, you know, the peripherals are very good with him. He's only allowed 11 hits, 3 walked in these 22 innings, over his last 22 innings, I'm sorry. He's faced teams like, you know, the Rays, the White Sox. Yeah, not the greatest, but he did very good at Fenway in his last start. Not great numbers against the Toronto Blue Jays over the course of his career, but as we know, this is a much different Jays team that we see that we have seen here over the last couple weeks. So, and talking about Estrada or Severino, what are you really intrigued by here?
Well, I don't normally, I'm a big Marco Estrada guy. I don't really like Estrada in this ballpark today. It's kind of one of those things, like, you know, you've got a pretty high fly ball pitcher. You've got a guy that hits a team that hits a lot of fly balls. It's very, very, very difficult for me to get on the Marco Estrada bandwagon. I mean, he's over the last 2 years, last year and this year combined, he's got over a 50% fly ball rate. And he's got the lowest ground ball percentage on the slate today. So it's very, very, very difficult to get behind the Marco Estrada bandwagon today. And I'm a big Marco Estrada guy.
Okay.
So but I'm very, I don't know what to do with the Yankees, because I think, after, you know, I think Aaron Judge is going to be extremely highly owned. So.
All right. If we're talking about bats here, let's take a look at who's really bopping for each side. Kevin Pillar, you got Russell Martin, Jose Bautista has even gotten back in the groove of things a little bit. Still not, you know, that power guy that we all know, but he has 7 for his last 22, double, 5 walks over the last 7 games. He just missed one yesterday. Maybe, you know, that same ball definitely goes out in Yankee Stadium. So we'll see what happens there with him tonight. And then for the Yankees, they got a lot of guys that are really swinging the bats lately. My entire life, it was passed down from my father to me, just being a habitual Yankee hater. But this team that they got right now, you know, since it's not the high-priced free agents, everybody just migrating to New York. I like watching these young kids. They got a lot of spunk. Really making life hard on a lot of teams, and, you know, a lot of great innings there. Great drama against the Orioles over the weekend. So, as you mentioned, Aaron Judge could be very popular. He's got 4 homers over the last 5 games. Starlin Castro's swinging well. Didi Gregorius has come right out of the gate in his first 3 games off the DL to go 7 for 15, 2 doubles and 4 RBIs. Matt Holliday's even swinging pretty well here too. So, a lot of options available here for these Yanks.
Yeah, I think you do. I think this is going to be one of the more popular stacks of the night, just because it's the Yankees, and the Yankees, just like the Cubs, are always going to carry a certain level of ownership, especially when they start performing well. I don't know if I'm going to completely fade them, but I'm definitely going to be underweight on them.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, you know, it's interesting to see how the Yankees are going to play this one because, like I mentioned, they had just a very highly emotional series with the Orioles over the weekend. Like, every game just had you on the edge of your seat. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they take these Jays, if they take them lightly, if, you know, they don't necessarily come out of the gate swinging hot tonight. But that is certainly a game that I'll have on my TV because, hell, I'm in the damn market, so...
You know, yeah, just as long as I don't have to listen to John Sterling, then
the right. 1-1. Yeah, John, you know, this is a great game we got here tonight. All right, no more Susan Waltman impressions for the rest of the day.
Yeah, they're idiots, so.
All right, Baltimore Orioles at the Boston Red Sox tonight. Pair of righties going in this one. Dylan Bundy for the Orioles. Rick Porcello, the New Jersey native for the Red Sox. Dylan Bundy, he's had a quality start each time out. 3-1, 1.65 ERA. The whip is just under 1. Great peripherals right there. Two of those quality starts were against Boston this season. He's only got 6 strikeouts between 13 and a third innings against him this season, but everything else is pretty low. He's only allowed 3 earned runs against him, so no homers. That's still a positive sign as well. Yeah, we were talking about this too just before the show. You know, he's only got 23 strikeouts and 32 and a third innings so far this season, but we date back to last season. You know, the strikeout rate looks a little better. So we'll get into that in a second.
And I think part of that reason is the fact that, you know, he's faced the Red Sox twice, and the Red Sox don't strike out a lot.
Good point.
So I think that has a lot to do with it, his strikeout percentage being so low.
All right. Now, again, here we're looking at Rick Porcello. I mean, he hasn't really pitched that well in his first 3 starts, but he has rebounded in the last 2. Still took the loss in each one of those games, but, you know, run support was at a very bare minimum there. You know, not great numbers against the Orioles over his last 8 starts, 3-3 with a 4.67 ERA. He's allowed 27 earned runs and 8 homers in the last 52 innings against them. So this could be a sneaky stack. And again, just like the Red Sox, you know, they had that, you know, all that fanfare going on with the Cubs being in Fenway. I don't know, maybe they look past this Orioles team. Maybe not. You know, we had all that drama going on last week with Manny Machado and Dustin Pedroia. So what do you see playing out here?
I think this is the time that, unfortunately, I hate to say it and I hate to be the guy, to go against my boy, but, I have no interest, looking at the strikeout rate of the Boston Red Sox against Dylan Bundy. I have no interest in Bundy tonight.
Right. As you shouldn't. Now, you know, looking at these Red Sox, you got a couple guys who, you know, little bit in the groove here. Hanley Ramirez had 2 tape measure shots over the weekend. That's certainly somebody that looks a bit zeroed in on the ball right now. A couple decent BVP numbers here against Bundy. Dustin Pedroia, 6-for-15. Mookie Betts, 5-for-15. Jackie Bradley Jr., 4-of-11. So those all play positively, but... Again, Bundy has just kind of been a little bit of a thorn in their side, not necessarily letting them jump all over him yet this season.
Yeah, I mean, I could see a good start from Bundy, which is why I wouldn't say I would go all in stacking the Red Sox. But I don't see a lot of upside from Bundy.
Gotcha.
So, like, I don't see a 8 or 9 strikeout performance with 6 or 7 innings and maybe like one run allowed. I don't see that type of performance from Bundy. Not saying he's not capable. I just don't see it against this Boston Red Sox team.
Indeed. That the feeling is mutual, my friend. Talking about Porcello here for a second. Orioles not really hitting the greatest. I mean, Adam Jones, I believe 11 for his last 27, if I'm not mistaken, but a lot of singles in the mix. Not too many power numbers there. But, you know, Chris Davis, he's on a bit of a slump right now. I just had the damn numbers. Where the hell are they? My God. Chris Davis, 2 for his last 17, 9 strikeouts in that span. You got J.J. Hardy, who's got good BVP numbers against Porcello, but he's 2 for his last 19 over the last 5 games. You know, Machado, Trumbo, Seth Smith, all with pretty good numbers here against Porcello. But I gotta say, you know, the Orioles aren't a team that I'm necessarily excited about stacking just because of how they've been swinging lately. But then again, you know, Yankees pitching has been pretty good lately, so you got to take that into account as well.
Yeah, if they were facing the Yankees, I would really like that stat, you know. But since they're facing the Red Sox, I'm willing to take a chance on the Baltimore Orioles stack here, especially, you know, guys like Crush Davis, Seth Smith, you know, the top. I would say the top four in that order, or maybe a wraparound stack if Jonathan Scope is batting in that nine hole. You know, I don't mind that at all either.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move along here. We've got the Cleveland Indians at the Detroit Tigers. Trevor Bauer, the righty for the Indians. Daniel Norris, the lefty for the Tigers. Well, the good news with Bauer is he got 28 strikeouts in 23 innings, but other numbers not going so well in his favor. 6.26 ERA so far, 1.35 whip, giving up at least four earned runs in all but one of his starts. I know he's also allowed five homers in 23 innings this season. Bauer got torn apart by the Tigers earlier this season, and even from 2014 to 2016, he had a 6.89 ERA against them. That includes 38 earned runs allowed in 49 and two-thirds innings, and also nine homers in that span as well. Talk about Daniel Norris for this one. This is a guy that has noticeable reverse home road splits. He's great. He's absolutely great on the road. But when we take it home to Comerica Park, things have just not been there. We're even talking about from 2014 to 2016, he had a 4.53 ERA. All of that has carried on over to this season where he's got a 6.10 ERA. And opposing hitters are hitting 356 at Comerica Park against him this season. So sneaky, sneaky. Indians, probably not, but definitely a good way to go.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel Norris is a guy that just does not like sleeping in his own bed, evidently. I don't understand why. I always love sleeping in my own bed compared to a hotel room. But it's kind of one of those situations where you're sitting there going, well, is this really, really, really a place that we want to attack? I think it is. I think it's a great, great opportunity to kind of, you know, stack up some of these guys for the Indians. I'm really, really, really looking at guys like Frankie Lindor, Jose Ramirez, Austin Jackson, Yan Gomes, maybe even a Jason Kipnis.
Yep.
It's somebody, and I know Jason Kipnis left on left. Jason Kipnis is one of the best left on left hitters in Major League Baseball. I know his numbers this year don't show it, but traditionally over the course of his career, he actually does hit lefties pretty well. It's going to depend on, you know, what this lineup is like. If they throw out, I mean, obviously Carlos Santana's in play too, but if they throw out guys like Brandon Guyer in that three hole, and you know, guys like Austin Jackson, then it's gonna change a little bit. So
yeah, I'm glad you brought up that left on left thing, because left-handed bats are hitting 368 against Norris this season. You know, Michael Brantley's been hitting pretty well here. He's got three homers in the last six games, so that could certainly be well. Francisco Lindor, over the course of his career, we've seen him have a lot more pop from the right-handed side, so I really like that play a lot. Again, too, remember we've talked about this plenty of times, that the Indians are going to score a lot of runs. That means that Jose Ramirez is probably going to be in the middle of it, driving a lot of them in.
Are you worried about his home road splits?
I don't know. I mean, hell, Norris's should kind of make up for that.
See, that's what I'm thinking. And I think we might, because his home road splits are so, like, drastically known around the industry, I think we might get him a little bit on the sneaky side tonight. The Indians don't go home until, like, the 14th. It's like the middle of the month. They've got, like, a 12-game or 11-game road trip that they're starting today. And I think that this is a place where we can kind of get him a little bit under-owned. Because of the, you know, the drastic home road splits and the popularity of those splits for Jose Ramirez.
All right. Now I gotta say, with Daniel Norris, it's obvious that the man likes midnight nurses from Jersey in his hotel room, and that's really what gets him going.
Yeah, I mean, he's the real life Henry Rowan Gardner. So.
Yeah, and no, it's not Rowan Gardner. It's the little shit that was managing the Twins.
Oh, yeah, from Little Big League.
Yeah, Billy Hayes.
Billy Hayward.
Hayward. Hayward. All right. Whatever. That Bowers, man. Real son of a bitch. All right. There are a couple of good numbers here for the Tigers up against Bower. You know, we're looking at it. Now, Alex Avila against Bower, 7 for 18, 2 homers in that stretch. But you got to look at it over his last 5 games. He's also 7 for 15. Look at that. You know, so he could be good here. Tyler Collins is a guy that I've been using a little bit lately. Not exactly going to wow you to death with the numbers, but he's a pretty cheap guy that can still, you know, just get on base for you and not give you a zero. Kind of like the homeless man's Nick Markakis, if you will. By the way, did you know? I did not know this, but you know how I always say he's the homeless man's, you know, blah, blah, blah. Did you know that Bill Simmons came up with that? Because I said it over the weekend. They're like, Bill Simmons fan. I'm like, I am, but what does that have to do with anything? And they're like, that's what he says all the time. I did not know this. So
I didn't either. I have not listened to Bill Simmons in years, probably. Just because he doesn't do anything fantasy related is more of, you know, the reason why. It has nothing to do with anything else. So.
Gotcha. But, yeah, a lot of good numbers here. If you check out the notes article that I have today, you'll see some more there. Right-handed bats, they've been having a little slightly more success against Bower this season. So even like even Kinsler and the Castellanos, guys like that could work out well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I like a lot of those.
All right, let's talk about the Pittsburgh Pirates at the Cincinnati Reds. Gerrit Cole, the righty, goes for the Buccos, and Amir Garrett, the rookie southpaw, going for the Reds. Let's talk about Gerrit Cole first. He's had 4 straight quality starts, very efficient with his pitches last start. It only took him 78 to make it 7 innings last time out. He's had...
why he got pulled, I have no idea.
Yes. No idea. He's had 16 strikeouts over the last 2 games, that at St. Louis and at home against the Cubs, so that's impressive. But the one thing we got to look out here, he's got a terrible history against the Reds. He's 0-6 with a 5.44 ERA in his last 8 starts. We're talking 26 earned runs allowed in 43 innings, 5 homers allowed there as well. So keep that in mind. Amir Garrett, he got the win against Pittsburgh the last time he faced them earlier this season. 5 Ks over 6 2/3, only allowed 5 hits, 1 earned run. That was a home run to David Freese. Now, this is going to be interesting to see what the crowd does with Garrett tonight, right? Because he was the darling early on in the fantasy season, heads to Miller Park, got his head boxed in for a couple innings. So, you know, before that start, he's got an ERA of 1.83, goes all the way up to 5.09. Have people completely fallen out of love with Amir Garrett, or can you go back here tonight?
I think tonight's the night that you can go back, depending on the lineup that the Pirates put out. And the reason I say that is I want to see exactly who's in this lineup. And I'm gonna get I want to get an idea of exactly, you know, who's touting what as far as Amir Garrett. You know, Garrett's one of those guys where we've got such a small sample size that we're sitting here looking at it, and he was there for a while, one of the highest rated pitchers on the slate, any slate that he was going on. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, after one bad start, he's in the lower half. Well, it doesn't compute because of the small sample size, and it's because he's a rookie. And we talked about it the last time. You know, it's just a matter of time. He's a rookie. It's just a matter of time before rookies get blown up. It has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that, you know, this is a professional sports league, and players adjust a lot. He also, I think, ran into a absolutely completely freaking hot Brewers team.
Right.
This is not a hot Pirates team by any stretch of the imagination. This is a very pedestrian team. I don't think that there's going to be an issue playing these guys, the Reds, as far as the offense is concerned. I don't think there's going to be an issue playing Amir Garrett, but it also is going to depend on the ownership, on how much you know, exposure I want to have to him. So I think he's in a good spot here. Hold on one second. Let me double check this, because I do believe that the wind is blowing out in okay, wow. It's blowing right to left at an outwardly direction at 17 miles an hour currently at Great American Ballpark.
All right.
So you know what that means.
Right-handers.
Right-handed power bats, my friend, because mishit fly balls to left field are going to end up eight rows deep.
Yeah, no, I got you. And look, this whole thing is just very interesting because, you know, I would love to go back to Amir Garrett. He's already shown that he can pitch well against the same Pirates team, but the ballpark certainly doesn't do him any favors. The wind, that's not going to help him out at all tonight.
I'm more worried about the wind. If this wind drops down to, like, you know, 6 to 8 miles an hour, I'm not as worried about it. 17 turns cans of corn into dongs. So,
you know,
that's a big, big, big difference between, you know, what we've got going on here. So,
right. And, you know, the other thing you got to think about too, like the Pirates, sure, you know, not the greatest hitting team right now, but they can also probably put out an all righty lineup if they really wanted to. Like, I'm sure Gregory Polanco will be in the lineup, but if they really wanted to go platoon, platoon, platoon all the way down the lineup, they could do it. So, you know, that part is interesting. Let's talk about some bats in this game, because we can get to the Pirates in a little bit, but I wanted to start with the Reds because some of their numbers tonight look so good for them that this very well could be the stack of the night. So, all right, we know Cole has his struggles against the Reds. We already talked about that, but Scott Schebler right now for the Reds is just on freaking fire. The funny thing is he's not cheap at all. Like, I believe he's $3,600 or something like that on FanDuel. But again, we're going to have him at Great American Ballpark. Recently, he's 9-for-19, three doubles, four homers, nine RBIs, five runs over the last five games. Just absolutely crushing it. Almost hit two homers yesterday at Busch Stadium. So, you know, that's certainly what you like in your hitters. But keep in mind here, too, since 2014, Gerrit Cole has allowed a very high stolen base success rate. So, you know, guys like Billy Hamilton, Jose Peraza, even a Joey Votto can get on base against him, too.
You can't play Joey Votto today.
Really make life hard on him.
Yeah, I don't think you can play Joey Votto in anything other than, like, tournaments that you're multi-entering in. He's too damn expensive and, like... Okay, besides Peraza and Hamilton, he's probably the guy I would pick last to hit a double dong. You know, okay. Just because he could walk four times. He's so expensive. And you're telling me that I'm paying for a guy... Yeah, if this was the old, like, FanDuel where you get minus 0.25 for outs... Joey Votto was an amazing guy to just, you know, plug and play at first base, especially in this ballpark. But I'm not paying for 12 points for four walks and a couple runs scored. I want some dongs, damn it.
Whoa. All right. Well, you know, we'll try to get them for you. But, yeah, I would like to see certainly some Reds in my lineup tonight. And
oh, yeah. I'll have plenty of Reds exposure.
Actually, Scott Schebler came all the way down to 3,300, so that's more like if you're going with a Kershaw tonight, that is certainly doable right there.
Can we talk about the prejudice of Coors Field for a second? Of hitters' ballparks, because why pitchers aren't priced up in parks like AT&T and Chavez Ravine? Mm-hmm. And why they're not priced up or hitters aren't priced up more in parks like Great American Ballpark, you know, Chase Field, stuff, places like that. It's a prejudice to Coors Field.
You present an interesting case here.
because, you know, everybody talks about, especially like when you start talking about guys and their, you know, Hall of Fame candidacy or MVP candidacy, and they're like, oh, well, he plays half his games at Coors. Well, okay. I do believe when the 2007 MVP voting came down to two people, it was Jimmy Rollins and Matt Holliday, correct?
I know Jimmy Rollins was in there because he won the damn thing.
Yeah, Matt Holliday was second. And everybody was like, well, the reason that Matt Holliday didn't win is he plays half his games at Coors Field. Okay. Well, then why didn't Jimmy Rollins get a knock for playing at that ballpark?
Very true. Very true. But I will say that year Jimmy Rollins was – somebody else did it that year. I completely forgot who, but he was one of – you know, at the time, he was one of three major league players to have 20 doubles, triples, and homers in a season, and I believe stolen bases as well, which was just an incredible stat at that time. But,
I'm not saying Jimmy Rollins didn't deserve it. I'm just saying that, you know.
And he did come out and say to the Met, we are the team to beat, and then, you know, he fucking proved it, baby.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, you know, until we beat you in the playoffs. I'm just saying that, you know, we talk about these prejudices when it comes to Coors Field. Nobody gives credit for a pitcher having a, you know, a 4.2 ERA at Coors, you know, or 4.5 ERA at Coors, you know, but they discredit, you know, Nolan Arenado hitting 42 home runs when he plays half his games at Coors, you know, even though he hits more on the road, or he hit more on the road than he did at home. Nobody credits Charlie Blackmon for hitting for a higher average on the road than he did at home last year. You know, or there's prejudices when it comes to baseball, and I think it's wrong. These DFS sites, the fact that they don't price up hitters and pitchers depending on the ballpark, they don't have that dynamic pricing, I think is something that needs to change. Now, I'm probably one of the only ones that think this, but the fact that you can put a Cincinnati stack and not pay more than $3,500 per player, you know, and get guys like Adam Duvall and Scott Schebler in there that can legitimately go double dong, for less than you could get probably the cheapest guy at Coors on a good slate, I think is wrong. So, yeah, take advantage of it. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I mean, take advantage of it because it can definitely be the stack of the night, like you said.
Yeah. All right. Any Pirates bats that we're looking at here against the lefty? I mean, David Freese, of course, mangling lefties his whole damn career. I'm sure going to be on him, but any interest elsewhere?
Gift Negligup.
You know.
I think Jose Ozuna, Josh Harrison, but yeah, I mean, I want some of these. I want some of the, maybe a Josh Bell. I think a little. It depends on what Clint Hurdle does with these guys, because if he can put Gift, Bell, Ozuna back to back to back, now you can't do it on FanDuel, but you can do it on DraftKings because Josh Bell, I think, is outfield eligible as well. Either Josh Bell or Jose Ozuna. One of them's outfield eligible as well. I think you can do it there, but you can't on FanDuel because Ozuna and Bell are both first basemen. So it depends. It really does depend on what they throw out. But those two, Bell and Ozuna, are both have over a 200 or a 250 ISO versus right or left-handed pitching this season. So that's probably where I would be kind of leaning. Maybe even Andrew McCutchen. He seems to have pretty good numbers against left-handed pitching this year so far. He's grading out currently at a 91.2. And then Josh Harrison actually has better numbers than him and is grading out at a 98.6. So, I've got a little, especially if this wind doesn't change, I've got some interest in the right-handed power bats, but, I'm not going to go out of my way to pick on Amir Garrett in case he decides to show up and last year or last, uh, last start was, you know, the exception to the norm. Hello?
I'm here. Sorry. Yep, I had the mute. I had to cough up along here. Sorry.
Oh, you're fine.
Let us talk about the two teams from the Sunshine State. We've got the Tampa Bay Rays and the Miami Marlins. Jake Odorizzi, the righty, goes for the Rays. Wei-Yin Chen, the lefty, going for the Miami Marlins. Odorizzi, pretty good history against these Marlins, 2.12 ERA in his last three starts. He will be making his first start after a 10-day DL stint with the hamstring. The numbers aren't that great for him this year. He does have a whip of one, but, you know, he's been giving up a couple of runs, only 8 strikeouts in 13 innings, not the greatest there. Wei-Yin Chen, 2-1 with a 4.71 ERA, 1.24 whip. He's been playing that bad start, good start game this season. So tonight would be the bad one if you're in line for one of those things. Not the greatest history against the Marlins either. Against the Rays from his days with the Orioles. He was 3-3 with a 4.30 ERA in 12 starts. Did allow 32 earned runs in 67 innings and 15 homers. Now, I'm sure a lot of that was probably at Camden Yards in that bandbox, but nonetheless, they're making good contact. Hey, you got to hit it over the wall to get it over the wall. You know what I mean?
Hot take.
Yeah, bum, bum, bum. All right, either guy I'm not particularly interested in, so glance over?
No, not – well, for pitchers, yes.
Okay. I meant Breeze, not glance over.
I have interest in – obviously, Evan Longoria's got some pretty sick BVP against Wei-Yin Chen. Steven Souza Jr. as well. So I've got some interest there. Other than that, probably nobody for the Rays, but Jake Odorizzi has some massive reverse splits, and I really do like the right-handed power bats for these Miami Marlins because I think they're going to be under-owned.
All right. With Longoria, yes, he does have some decent numbers here against Chen, but 3 for his last 24, and Kevin Kiermaier is one of the biggest slumps in the majors. But you probably won't see him against Chen, but still have
3-4 his last 24 against Chen, or 3-4 his last 24 complete?
His last six games.
That makes a little bit of a difference there. So,
all right. Let's see. And then also, if we're looking at the Marlins, you're right. I forgot to mention that about Odorizzi. That's something that we always know. But Giancarlo Stanton not hitting very well lately either. 2 for 17.
Shocker.
2 for his last 17 with 7 strikeouts over the last 5 games. So you got to wonder if that's all coming with them. So maybe that's where Martin Prado or Marcelo Zuna could work out.
Marcelo Zuna. Who else here?
Real Muto.
I'm looking. There they are. Ozuna, Prado, Real Muto. Oh, I want them to throw out, you know, I guess if you want to throw 4 people in there, I don't mind a Stanton as well, but try to get creative without your stack. I mean, you could even, instead of throwing Stanton in there, you could throw Justin Bour, who's seeing the ball a lot better and hitting the ball a lot better right now.
Yeah.
Did
you see how he got it, how he got his groove, how Stella got his groove back?
I did not.
Hitting off a tee.
Wow, it's shocking what T-Work will do for
somebody. They showed it on a quick pitch last night. So they Bohr hit a homer late in the game, and they had the Miami announcers feed in on quick pitch, and the guy was like, "You're probably going to see 10 Marlins lined up at the tee tomorrow." So we'll see if everybody else gets in.
Yeah, I think Stanton needs to do some major T-Work. Giancarlo, if you're listening to this, and I know you do,
all the time.
Why don't you just, you know, take your next off day, come over here to Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. We'll go out to my field down here, and we'll do some tee work. You know, okay. I'll throw you some soft toss. I'll throw you some soft toss from, you know, from backwards, so you have to worry about your hand speed and stuff like that. We'll get you all figured out. I'll get your swing all worked out here.
No offense to the wonderful people of Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, but I'm sure he would rather be in Miami where, you know, chicks are just walking around in bikinis all day sipping fruity drinks and shit. So
he's not going to find his swing in Miami.
All right, whatever. I'm just saying. That's
he
why
hasn't
I would like
found
to
it yet.
Fix my swing. All right, Just saying. I don't think Oklahoma's gonna do it. Any other gentlemen from this game, or are we moving?
We're flying, brother.
We're mobile. All right, we got the New York Mets at the Atlanta Braves. Pair of righties here. Robert Gzelman for the Mets. Julio Teheran, the right-hander for the Braves. Now, Gzelman's gotten roughed up in two of his last three starts, especially that last time out against the Braves. Gives up 10 hits, 3 walks, 5 earned runs, and 4 innings. It actually was a lot worse than those stats are out there. It was just an absolutely brutal game altogether.
Wasn't that on short rest, too? Because this is when the Mets started their, you know, their jungle or their like swapping of the starters because of this and that, and
perhaps
I can't remember when that started because of the whole Noah Syndergaard thing, who is going on the DL, by the way.
Yes, again, like, it's funny because they've been talking about that a lot here on the radio in the New York area, just basically saying, like, something's wrong with them. And apparently he just did not want to cough it up that something was wrong with them. He did throw the bullpen session on Friday. But here's another thing, too. Like, he was hitting 100 in yesterday's game. So maybe, maybe he wasn't hiding anything. But
This is supposedly a different injury. This is a lat strain.
Right,
which...
yeah. It's like the Mets wanted him to get an MRI and see what was going on in there. He said, no, I'm fine. And then, boom, this happens.
Well, it's
more frustration
case.
For them.
Well, not only that, but this is the classic case of what I think is overcompensating. If you've ever thrown, like, with any sort of velocity at all, and force a baseball. First, it's not a natural, you know, movement of the arm.
So we're not talking to professional dart players here?
No, okay. Not. This puts more stress on your elbow and your forearm and your shoulder. But when your arm starts to hurt a little bit, you overcompensate by trying to do something else. And that's where I think, like, the lat strain can kind of, you know, get into it. What I honestly think that the Mets need to do is they just need to shut anybody that has any sort of pain down right now. Like, it's April. Oh, sorry. Excuse me, sorry. It is May 1st.
Somebody didn't flip their calendar over today.
I haven't yet. It is May 1st. Okay, just shut them all down. Get them healthy, because guess what? If you can go on a run, and the Nationals are not going to win at this and put up runs at this pace all season long, like, they are going to go on a. We'll and see. I know that's a hot take, but like, nobody ever does. Like, they're going to go on a little bit of a flounder. You just need to be able to capitalize on it when they do, and you can't do that with Harvey being, you know, not a little bit of what he is, and you trying to throw him out there on short rest, and why you throw a guy out there, that's a whole nother thing. But you can't do it without Noah Syndergaard. You can't do it without, you know, Zach Wheeler and Steven Matt. You can't do it without these guys, or Yoenis Cespedes. Like, just if they're ailing, shut them down.
Yeah, I think you got a lot of pride with this team too, especially because, you know, a lot of people had them pegged for definitely the playoffs and, you know, possibly even the World Series, especially with all the arms that they got there. So, yeah, that's probably why they're trying to give it a go here. But, yeah, I mean, it is still incredibly early. But I will say this. I mean, the way that the Nationals are playing right now, if they would have swept – let's play devil's advocate here. If they would have swept the Mets over the weekend, I believe – they would have been up 10 games.
Yeah, I think it was 10 and a half was the number.
Yeah, so, you know, I think, you know, there might be a little bit of – I shouldn't even say a little bit. I'm sure there's a lot of worry going on there. I mean, they can still definitely make the wild card. I mean, that's within reason. But you look at, you know, I guess what happened to them last season, where you could just run into a hot pitcher like Madison Bumgarner and boom, one game, your season's done. So – you know, I think these guys are a bit stubborn. You know, you're in the New York market, got freaking pressure over, like, hanging over your head every single day. So, I don't know, maybe, you know, this just puts them, you know, finally puts it into perspective now. Like, all right, maybe we should sit down a little bit. Like, Yoenis Cespedes, he was a guy that looked obviously hurt out there, and then he goes and hurts himself even more. So there's just a lot of stuff going on right now with this Mets team, and I'm happy about it, but you know, I don't want to see it happen by people getting hurt. I just want them to suck.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's just bad karma right there, folks. You don't want that.
Yeah, you don't want to. I've always said this. I don't want to win because of the refs or because, you know, somebody gets hurt and it now creates an excuse for these teams. I want to win because I'm the better team and I beat you.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to win. I hate losing when I beat myself. Like if I lose, a cue because I made a dumb decision, or I overanalyze something or something, then that's my fault. And I hate losing when it's my fault. You know, if I lose because of variance and somebody else just had a better lineup than I did, then you know what? I tip my cap to them.
Right.
So that's kind of the way that I go when it comes to stuff like this. You know, in baseball right now, I love the fact that, you know, the Rockies, even though we haven't gotten, you know, anything from John Gray or Tyler Anderson, one because Gray's hurt, two because Anderson's been pretty inconsistent. I love the fact that we're competing and we haven't even been fully healthy, you know. I love the fact that they haven't used it as an excuse either. You know, your Phillies, they compete every single day. They're just not as talented as some of these teams. And that's fine, you know. But don't go – like the Washington series for Colorado pissed me off because we had made 5 errors all year. And in that 3-game series or 4-game series, we made 7. The first 20 games, 5 errors. The next 4, 7. Like, I'm not saying that Washington's not good, but I don't think that we put our best foot forward in competing with them, and I don't think that that series was as telling or as true to what could happen as it normally is. And the Mets are like that. The Mets, they rely on the long ball, but they don't get any runners on base, and they don't play defense. And now you're telling me that they can't pitch right now either? I'm sorry. I believe in the talent of Gesellman. I think he's got great stuff. But part of being a good pitcher, unless you're going to be able to strike out 14 guys a game, you have to have a good defense behind you. And the Mets just don't have that right now. Yeah. I mean, some of the plays that I've seen Jose Reyes make at third base is just absolutely completely stupid. And the fact that Jay Bruce right now is your first baseman. Now, granted, he hasn't completely sucked, but he hasn't been great. Like, until the Mets can kind of solidify some of these things, I don't think I can play a Mets pitcher.
Yeah, absolutely not. You know, I think it goes without saying, especially, too, if you're not going to have the great defense behind you. I mean, I'm kind of veering off from the whole getting the win thing. Like, it's not the most important thing to me when picking a pitcher anymore. Just because I don't think we're getting enough points for it, but
I'm more interested in quality starts.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, just because the stats come along with the quality starts, duh. But yeah, absolutely. Gesellman off the table now. He's a guy we've talked about him multiple times, having the reverse splits where right-handers are crushing him. He throws a two-seamer that goes. And it just breaks right down the middle. He just hasn't learned to throw it the right way. So, guys, and you saw that the last start. So
he's got the Eddie Butler syndrome.
So you got guys like Matt Kemp who are attractive here. You've got Adonis Garcia even for very
cheap, Freddie Freeman.
Who can go with your Clayton Kershaw lineup. Tyler Flowers had a big 3-run double against him the last time out. Of course, Freddie Freeman is bopping with the best of them in the bigs right now.
Especially in this ballpark. Fire.
So when, yeah, things are certainly looking up for.
When
for
was the last back. Time that we saw an 8.5 total in Atlanta?
Well, especially in the new ballpark, because you know this one's.
No, I was talking about like before this year.
I don't know. I try not to pay attention to the Braves either.
It just, you know, they've got an implied run total of 4.33. Get that out of your mouth. All right. Not you. Cameron's trying to eat Nerf gun darts.
I've been there.
You know, I love a lot of the Rays or the Braves left-handed bats in this game. Markakis, Freeman, Inciarte. I also don't mind guys like Jay Bruce, maybe a Curtis Granderson, definitely a Michael Conforto. The problem is we have now that that neck or that this is where we have to start trying to figure out if it's, you know, good talent and, you know, just a pitcher being able to perform well and own these teams or not, because we're starting to get some of these teams facing each other for the third time in a series. Yeah. You know, Dylan Bundy's now facing the Red Sox for the third time this year already in you know, a month. Julio Teheran's the same way. You know, he's owned the Mets twice this season already.
And we can go all the way back to last year. 2014 if we want to. I mean, the numbers are ridiculous against the Mets for him. So I just wanted to bring it up. So he had from 2014 to 2016, he had a 2.15 ERA against them. 6-3 in that stretch. Already this season, 1-0 with a 1.46 ERA. I mean, if you remember his first start, you know, to open up the season at Citi Field, and then the bullpen kind of came in and just ruined the whole day for the Braves. And then actually both starts of his against the Mets were at Citi Field this season. And this was the same matchup where Teheran, you know, got that huge lead and all that run support, and he was still mowing down these Mets guys. So, yeah, I just think it's something, you know, in the matchup that he just does very well against them. And, you know, we take a look at a lot of these Mets hitters, you know, like Curtis Granderson, who you mentioned, he's won for his last 19. Conforto's been doing well. Jose Reyes is actually – now, he hasn't done well against Teheran over the course of his career, but he is 8 for his last 19, double, triple, 2 homers, 6 runs over the last 5 games. So that was interesting to see him pop off over the weekend. I actually had him in my lineup yesterday, and he hit, I believe, a leadoff triple and a run, but that was it. So he's not a bad cheap option, but again, that history against Teheran, I don't think there's going to be many runners on base tonight for the Mets, so – this is just this could be another Teheran day.
Yeah, I think for the Mets, it's more of one-offs. Guys like Bruce, Conforto, but that's about it. Just because this park right now has kind of leaned towards left-handed power. But other than that, you know, I think it's. I think that's about it as far as what I'm thinking, at least from the Mets side. I really do like the Braves a little bit more than the Mets. So, and I really do like Julio Teheran as well.
Indeed, indeed. All right, let's move it on. We've got my Philadelphia Phillies at the Chicago Cubs. Phillies throwing the righty Vince Velasquez up against the lefty Brett Anderson for the Cubs. Velasquez has had 2 quality starts his last time out, but he's only combined for 5 strikeouts in those 2 performances. Overall numbers are not that impressive. So probably going to be off him tonight going up against these studly bats of the Cubs. Now, Brett Anderson, kind of got a guy that's on the other side of things, 2-0 with a 3.54 ERA. The whip is a little up there at 1.57. I'm not really sure what to make of him because, you know, he's had a couple starts where he's looked good, hasn't really gone that deep into games.
That's because Madden doesn't trust him yet.
I was going to say, like, he's able to keep some of these hitters off balance. I think if you're going to test out the Brett Anderson experiment, the Phillies wouldn't be a bad team to do it against. But, you know, certainly not my favorite pitcher of the day.
Yeah, and, you know, you're usually going to find a higher whip and BABIP with sinker baller pitchers. It's just, you know, they pitch a lot to contact. They don't strike out a lot of guys. And Brett Anderson's a sinker baller. You know, we've seen it time and time again. But he's the kind of guy that can go out and Greg Maddux you. He could throw a complete game in, you know, under 100 pitches. But he can also allow 5, 6, 7, 8 consecutive hits at the same time, and, you know, be wondering, and all of a sudden, you know, they're down 3-0. Because it's a single here, then a double, and then, you know, it kind of just escalates. So
yeah. All right, let's look at some bats here. There's really not much BVP history against him. Just Michael Saunders for the Phillies, 5-for-19 against him, a double, 3 Ks, womp womp. Not much history either for these Cubs against Velasquez. Montero and Zobrist have homered off him. I believe that was a game in Philly, so you know that happened in the bandbox. But I got to talk because now we got some of these Cubs hitters who are on two paths, right? So Chris Bryant, he's been hot lately, 11 for his last 23, 4 doubles, 2 homers. I mean, the guy's just been doing nothing but getting on base. He's even got 6 walks in that stretch, 7 runs. That's all very acceptable. But on the other end of that, so Bryant there in the two-hole doing big things. You got Kyle Schwarber and Anthony Rizzo, both 4 for the last 25 over the last 6 games. I know that – let's see here. So, all right, so the Cubs faced 2 lefties over the weekend, right, in Pomeranz and Erod. So maybe that's got something to do with it. But, again, against Velasquez, the last 2 starts, I think he's just focused more on being an efficient pitcher rather than trying to strike everybody out, which is good, for me as a Philly fan. But from a fantasy perspective, I think you could still pick on him.
Yeah, I kind of – really don't have any hot takes on this one. It's kind of straightforward. I don't like Vincent Velasquez. Everybody's still drooling over that 16 strikeout game. That was against the Padres. Yep. this isn't a place I want to go to. I was one of the guys that threw Pomerantz against the Cubs. Was that Friday night?
Yep.
And that it wasn't great, but it didn't blow up in my face. The Red Sox made some distinct defensive gaffes to that, even though they weren't counted as errors, were more of misplayed balls that allowed some runs to get in that probably shouldn't have. But overall, I was kind of impressed with it. I don't think this is the place that I want either pitcher, though. The Phillies are kind of minus the fact that they played in Chavez Ravine over the weekend. They're still not hitting the ball that bad. I like Mikel Franco a lot today. I think he's a really, really, really good option at third base, a position that overall is kind of weak today. You got guys like Manny Machado, up at the top, but other than that, there really isn't a ton of love, and I think a lot of people are going to kind of go to Chris Bryant today, and I think that might be a mistake.
All right. He is hot, but the price tag is a bit hefty, so we'll have to wait and see what happens there. All right, let's go to the Texas two-step where we got the Texas Rangers at the Houston Astros tonight. Why are my notes not coming up? Thank you very much. We got Andrew Cashner, the righty, going for the Rangers. Lance McCullers, the righty, going for the Astros. Now, I feel like Andrew Cashner is kind of overachieved at this point. He is.
Oh, yeah.
He is 0-2, but still, the ERA there at 2.93, the whip, not that great there at 1.70, but he's still not getting blown up like we always think that he will. So that'll be interesting. We'll talk about that here in a second. But Lance McCullers kind of got the good and the bad going on here because he's been great at home. If you look, you want to talk about this season so far, he's 2-0 with the 1.83 ERA and 4 starts there, 25 strikeouts in 19 2/3 of an inning. On the road, it's been completely different, 9.64 ERA and 2 starts, allowed 10 earned runs in 9 1/3 of an inning. The whole thing about him being at home is great, but these Rangers have really gotten to him over the last 3 starts, 0-3, 8.03 ERA, 11 earned runs in 12 1/3 innings. I know I've seen McCullers ranked pretty high today, but this has to scare you a little bit with the Rangers' history against them.
Oh, absolutely it does. This Ranger, it's kind of like a Clash of the Titans or Clash of Your Worlds. I've got McCullers as my number 6th ranked pitcher, according to our DFSA grades. But I don't – it's not like the Rangers are hot. And, like, I love the talent of McCullers, and he does pitch a heck of a lot better at home. But, and there's going to be some strikeouts here. Like, the Rangers are a team right now that currently strike out at, you know, over 21%, almost 22% against right-handed pitching. It's difficult to kind of know for sure and have confidence in what's going to happen on this end. I mean, you've got guys like Mike Napoli, who can always just hit the ball into orbit. I mean, Mazzara, Gomez, Rugi's got double dong power, and that's not even, you know, taking into account Joey Gallo.
Right.
So, like, there's some strikeouts here. But this could be a very, very sneaky stack, especially if McCullers gets a lot of traction, because he doesn't discriminate in the fly ball category by any stretch of the imagination. And we know that all you have to do is go to the Crawford boxes.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, the Rangers have been striking out a lot this season, so that part of it is interesting. It's just this history, you know. I kind of lean to those sort of things, like just how we saw Julio Teheran against the Mets. You know, that holds a lot of weight to me, but
especially when it's interdivision.
Yes, yes, indeed. They've seen plenty. Now, for the Rangers, you got Delino DeShields, Carlos Gomez, Shin-Soo Chu. Both these guys have been getting on base a ton over the last 5 to 6 games. DeShields and Gomez also have 3 stolen bases over that span. So, you know, we have that to look at. In terms of BVP, I'm not going to – you know, it's weird. I just said, oh, well, the Rangers are getting to him. But, you know, in terms of the BVP, I don't think any of them have seen him more than 10 times. So – you know, I'm not sure how much stock we put in that, but I don't know. The guys that are hot for the Rangers are very intriguing to me. And then for the Astros, you got Marwin Gonzalez, Jose Altuve, Josh Reddick, been getting on base the most for them. Carlos Correa, this is an interesting one. He struck out 11 times in his last 27 plate appearances. Certainly not the kind of stats I want from one of my players tonight. So
no, I haven't played Carlos Correa all year, and I don't plan on it right now.
No. And then in terms of BVP history, Norichika Aoki, a guy that I mentioned, I believe in our first podcast of the season, is just a great on-base guy for this Astros team. Could be sneaky with the wraparound stack there. He's 4-for-4 against Cashner, but that's really it in terms of significant numbers against him. I'll be interested. I saw this recently, too. They got Alex Bregman down at the bottom.
Yuli Gurriel.
Yeah, he's been popping lately, too.
He has the highest batting average against right-handed pitching this year.
No shit.
Yep. And he's going to go under-owned because he doesn't have the quote-unquote platoon advantage.
Okay. I like that. Let's see.
I don't think Gurriel's been over 10% owned all season in anything that any time that I've played him, he hasn't been over 10%. He's somebody that not a lot, because he's third base. Like if he was catcher eligible, I think it'd be a different story. But because he's third base eligible, and with the quality of third baseman that we have in the majors right now, I don't think that people really understand or know who he is. He's done it very quietly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at him today on FanDuel, 2,600. I actually played him a lot on fantasy draft last year. So he was basically like a, you know, dead minimum price player down there at like, you know, 4,500 maybe. Basically nothing. So you could fit in your top of the line pitchers. But the guy just gets on base. So, you know, these are guys that you kind of need in your lineup tonight if you're going with Kershaw. Just you don't want any zeros going up there. You just need guys that get on base. And you could certainly do it.
Yep.
All right. Anything else before we move on?
No. I think that we are good to go on that front.
All right. We got the Chicago White Sox at the Kansas City Royals. The young righty Dylan Covey goes for the White Sox, and Jason Vargas, the lefty, goes for the Royals. So it's been a rough start to this career for Covey. A lot of his numbers just look a lot or they just look terrible because of that dreadful outing that he had at Yankee Stadium. Overall, you're not going to pick him as your pitcher. He's just not going deep into games, and you know he's not getting many strikeouts. But you know, this Kansas City team is one of the worst hitting teams going right now, so you know that part of it's interesting. But whatever. Jason Vargas, he's just been the complete opposite of Covey. You know, 3-1, 1.40 ERA, got the 0.90 WHIP, which is always encouraging. Now, his last start was certainly his worst. It was against these same Chicago White Sox, but he will be going back home where he has not allowed an earned run in two starts yet so far. Of course, Kauffman Stadium is one of the best pitcher's parks in the game. So, you know, here's an interesting thing, too, where Vargas got a good look at these White Sox on the last time that he started. So I think he's going to come back. Just bounce back and have a really nice start. He, you know, he kind of saw what the White Sox had to offer. He saw what didn't work, and now he can come in and you know, just right his wrongs, if you will, in that regard. Now, when we're looking at bats in this game, you've got Melky Cabrera, Giovanni Soto for the White Sox. They have seen. They're the only ones with meaningful BVP numbers up against Vargas. Melky Cabrera, 7-for-22, double-triple homer, the cycle. Over the course of his career there against Vargas, Giovanni Soto's 4-for-12, the double homer. Does have 5 strikeouts, which I don't like, but that's all right. So, you know, the fact that the White Sox got to Vargas his last time out, you know, he was certainly in a much better hitter's environment for that. So a couple of these balls may not find some open grass, which could be good for Vargas here. You know, again, I like him tonight. I think he rights his wrongs against these White Sox, so that works. And then again, for these Kansas City Royals, there is just not a whole lot to like at all. You know, as I just mentioned, they're in one of the worst hitter's parks in the league. And, you know, you're starting to see it with a lot of these guys. And they're just, you know, none of them are really getting on base. Over the last week, nobody on the Royals has an OBP of over 400, which is god-awful. You know, not hitting for much power either. Brandon Moss does have 2 homers over the last week, but, you know, that's really it for him. So I know that they're going up against Dylan Covey tonight, but it's still the Royals.
Yeah, I don't think I have any interest in this team outside of Mike Moustakas.
Yeah.
Like, I could be wrong, but...
I mean, they can't suck this bad all year, can they?
Well, they better stop sucking, otherwise this team's not going to be the same in 3 months. like, these guys have to figure it out, because guys like Hosmer, Moustakas, they're going to be up for this bullpen. They're going to be up for sale if they don't... not like selling the team, but the players, if they don't figure something out and figure out something out quick, because they can't re-sign them all.
I'll take a Hosmer in Philly. That wouldn't be bad, you know, if they're just throwing folks out there, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So, it's something that, it's something that we really can't even attack right now because of how just blatantly bad they are.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting too is they like up until this weekend they had played a lot of their games on the road, and you still look at their numbers. They have the fewest runs by 24, you know, which is terrible. You've got their on base percentage; they're the worst by 14 points next to the Giants, but. I mean, their numbers are just terrible, and they haven't really played that many games at Kauffman Stadium. So, certainly not a good indicator for anybody here.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't have an interest in either one of these guys. This game is kind of, even though it's a 9 total, it's a 9 total.
They've been doing that a lot at Kauffman Stadium.
Yeah,
with the 9 total.
I'm just, they're trying to bait me in, and I'm not going to fall for it.
I am.
They've been doing this to us all year long, now that I think about it. This game is just a complete stay away for me.
Yeah, I'm going to have to call the bookman for this one. That's a 9? Come on, man. That's free money, basically. All right, let us get to – where are we next? We are at St. Louis, home of the Cards, and Nelly. Great rapper. Milwaukee Brewers are there to face the Cardinals. Zach Davies, the right-hander, goes for the Brew Crew. Michael Waka, the right-hander for the Cardinals. Zach Davies, he's failed to make it six innings in all five starts this season. He faced the Cardinals back on April 20th, went 90 pitches, gave up four earned runs, eight hits, two walks, and five and a third inning. It was not good. We're talking about Michael Waka. He's got quality starts all four times out this season. 2-1 with a 2.55 ERA, 1.09 whip, which is encouraging. 23 strikeouts and 24 and two-thirds of an inning. Pretty good against Milwaukee here, too. 3-0, 3.38 ERA in the last six starts. He does have 34 strikeouts in the last 32 innings. However, we do know that this Brewers team can mash, but since they're out of Miller Park, does that give you a little bit more interest in Waka here?
No.
Ooh.
Nope.
Could not bait him.
Nope. Absolutely not. There's not a lot of strikeout upside for me. I know the Brewers strike out a lot, but there's not a lot of strikeout upside as far as Waka, at least for me. Not when I've got, you know, other guys that I could go to and, you know, not be so worried about the implosion. and it has less to do with Michael Waka's ability and more to do with the defense that the Cardinals play. Like, you know, one guy boots a ball and all of a sudden, you know, what should have been a inning-ending double play turns into, and I know it could happen for anybody, but this is not the same core group of defensive team or defensive Cardinals that we have come accustomed to seeing. You know, last year they were really, really bad. This year they're not much better. I just can't do it.
All right. Let's see here. When we be talking about bats and whatnot, where's the interest line there?
I'm off of Eric Thames.
Okay.
Just because I think his ownership, his price is up there. His ownership's going to be a little bit higher. And I'd rather pay for Carpenter, who's cheaper and probably going to be less owned. I think whichever catcher starts for the Brewers is interesting, obviously. Jet Bandy, Manny Pina, whichever one they are, they just do nothing produce. Your boy Hernan.
Yeah. I played him on Saturday, and you know what he did for me?
Absolutely donut. Shit.
Donut. Still a beast, though.
Other than that, it's not really a lot for the Brewers. I mean, VR is just not getting on base. It's for me, it'd probably be a Perez, Bandy, maybe a Domingo Santana mini stack in there. Other than that, not really interested in a lot.
Just in terms of BVP real quick, Ryan Braun 4-for-9 against Waka, all singles. Jonathan Villar 1-for-9 with a double and five strikeouts. So that puts even more salt on the wound for Villar. For the Cardinals against Davies, you got Matt Carpenter 5-for-13, two doubles, a homer. Steven Piscotty 4-for-12, all singles, five strikeouts. Not that great. But Jed Jerko 7-for-10. Going up against Zach Davies here. Three doubles, a homer, two walks, only one strikeout. That might be your BVP play of the night right there.
Yeah, I love Jerko tonight. He's got one of the highest grade. He's got the highest grade on the Cardinals.
Interesting.
You know, normally he's a guy that kills left-handed pitching, but Zach Davies does not discriminate due to handedness. So I also think that Steven Piscotty is interesting. A lot of Miss Diaz. And don't look now, but Dexter Fowler's starting to swing the bat a lot better.
Yes, he is. Although he is 0-for-9 against Davies in his career. That's okay. You can get off the schneid, bruh.
Yeah, he could. I mean, 0-for-9, how many strikeouts is in that?
Two.
Okay, so maybe it's just, I wonder how many times he's put it in play, and it's just,
Let's do some simple math. 0 for 9, 2 no, strikeouts, 7 I under- balls in play.
No, that's not that. Not always.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, maybe it is. I was sitting there, I'm thinking, anyway. I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, no, not always, but yeah, maybe it is.
I got a degree for words, but I know basic math.
Evidently, I don't, and I'm better at math than I am at words. There he is, Zach Davies. Let's see here. He has 5 batted ball events against Zach Davies that's been recorded. Via StatCast, 88.9 mile per hour exit velocity. That's fifth highest on the team. The highest, obviously, is Matt Carpenter, who's just looked like he's absolutely owned Zach Davies. 5 for 13 with a home run. Average exit velocity is 96.8 in 9 batted ball events.
Watch out now. So, Carpe the diem.
Yeah,
all
no
right.
Kidding. I like that. I think it's quite nice. So if we go with that aspect, you know, going to Carpenter Jerko mini stack. Maybe even throw in a Piscotty,
all right,
and a Diaz. That might be a good little a 2-5 stack. Might be a good little place to attack it. This team is starting to hit the ball a lot better. They're starting to play a lot better on offense. I hate their defense right now. So
really forked one over to the Reds yesterday. My goodness.
Again, defense. Yeah.
All right, let's get to our final game of the night. It's a battle. In Cali, we've got the San Francisco Giants at the Los Angeles Dodgers. Johnny Cueto, the righty, goes for the Giants, while Clayton Kershaw, the lefty, goes for the Dodgers. Let's start with Kershaw. He faced the Giants last time out, went 7 innings, gave up 6 hits, a walk, 1 earned. Didn't have 7 strikeouts. We want more, though, from him. From 2014 to 2016, Kershaw went 7-3 against them with a 1.95 ERA in 14 starts. He does have 4 quality starts and 5 tries this season. The one he didn't, Coors Field. How do you like them apples? Because Johnny Cueto, he's had 3 quality starts and 5 tries this season. The only times he was unsuccessful, Chase Field, Coors Field. Notice the trend? Yeah. Those appearances have inflated his ERA to a 5.10, whip up to 1.40. That's just because of those starts. Even against the Dodgers last time out, they kind of got to him a little bit there at the end. In 6 innings, gave up 7 hits, 2 walks, 3 earned. Gave up that homer to Seager. That was a bomb. He only had 5 strikeouts in that one. Now, Kershaw, probably, you know, against pretty much anybody, he's the chalk on any slate. Against these Giants tonight, who he owns in BVP, don't see it being any different tonight. And big surprise, surprise, he's numero uno.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I love it. This is I don't like Clayton Kershaw in AT&T, but I absolutely love him in this spot in Chavez Ravine. So
I do want to see his K prediction tonight, because if you remember when these teams faced each other last weekend, remember Kershaw was. In terms of K prediction, he was like 15th of 30 pitchers on
that
day.
Yeah, wasn't it at a 5 that night? Really low.
It was really low. So I do want to see the numbers on that. If I see another low number, maybe I come off a little bit. Maybe I even do 2 different lineups tonight. I know, right? Who the hell am I? But, yeah, certainly something that you want to check out, because Vegas was spot on with that K prediction last time. I mean, I know we did have 7, but 7 for Kershaw is like, you know, 2 for anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, he's – I mean, obviously Kershaw's the number one pitcher on the slate. I think he's fadeable tonight because he's the only pitcher that can kill you. And I think that if you're going to get a contrarian type of lineup construction, if you fade him completely, either on DK or FanDuel. Now, I'm not saying, you know, if you're building 10 lineups, fade him in 10 lineups. You know, build a 2 or 3 or 4, you know, Kershaw lineups. But I'm saying that I don't think that you need to go 100% on Kershaw because it is baseball. And, you know, even though the calendar says May 1st, April is not Kershaw's best month. And he gets better as the season goes farther. I think this is one of the final starts that you could probably attack Kershaw. And maybe not attack him like play Giants bats, but attack him by not playing him in all, you know, all 100% of your lineups.
That's interesting. So, all right, if we're looking at some of these bats, I mean, you know, just based on BVP, it is not pretty for a lot of these Giants hitters. I'm not even going to go for the whole list, but I'm just going to point out two that are hysterical because you got Hunter Pence, who's 7-for-70 against him with all singles and 17 strikeouts. And then Brandon Belt is 3-for-51 against Kershaw lifetime with 27 strikeouts. That is insane. And then, of course, you know, there's a whole lot of very unattractive numbers scattered throughout that list. But there was one blip in there with Gorky's Hernandez 3-for-10 against him. But, I mean, come on. Are we being serious here? I don't think so. Yeah. Dodgers have some notable BVP against Cueto. Utley, Turner, Seager all have done very well against him. Adrian Gonzalez, Jock Peterson, Yasiel Puig not done so well against him. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, I like the pitchers in this game. I don't like a lot of the hitters. I see this being like a 3-2 game. I don't see anybody of the hitters killing us. If you want to throw in a guy like maybe a Grandal or a Corey Seager, maybe, you know, somebody that could... Nah, I wouldn't throw a complete stack on either one of these teams, obviously, but maybe a couple one-offs. I'm trying to look and see exactly what the whole Johnny Cueto, there he is. Corey Seager, Justin Turner, Chase Utley. I mean, those three have the most success against Cueto. I would probably go with a Justin Turner. He's a guy that can double dong. He's a guy that hit his first home run yesterday. He's a guy that's only 3.2K at a weaker position of the day. He's going to be, I would say, under 10% owned, maybe even lower. And a guy that's had pretty good success off of Cueto. And he's got the highest batted ball velocity outside of, you know, Andrew Toll's four events, but he's got the highest batted ball velocity, maybe even a mini stack of a Seager and a Turner, but that would be about it on my exposure to hitters in this game. So,
All right. Well, that'll do it for us today. Any questions, remember, hit us up on Twitter at, for me, 14a.walsh. For Keith, it's going to be at Boomers DFS Daddy. Of course, if you are signed up with the DFS Army, you can hit us up in the Slack chat. We'll be there all day. I do have to take like an hour or two nap because I got zero sleep and I'm sick out of my mind right now. But I will be back. Chop, Keith, everybody will be in there. So keep that in mind. And then we'll be back tomorrow, I guess.
Absolutely. Again, I apologize yesterday for the DS not being up for NBA. It will be up here probably the next 30 minutes for NBA baby. For tonight. So
I'll bite it. Who's it liking so far?
I don't know. I haven't run it yet. I just know it'll be up in the next 30 minutes.
All right, fair enough. I might even have to get into some NBA tonight, but we shall see. I am not feeling well at all. I almost fell asleep, not because of you talking, but because I got zero sleep during this podcast. So I got to close my eyes for a second.
That's fine. And for everybody wondering, I am trying to get Kevin to invest into some sort of lineup construction builder for baseball.
Oh, snap. All right.
I'm trying my best, and I've got some ways I've got to do it. So. If he's listening to this, Kevin, you can't close the checkbook yet, brother.
Dang, oh shit. All right, we will be back tomorrow. Peace
out.